The last few days of the year are a good time to think about your money, and not just because of the stock market, which has been a bit scary the last couple months, or your credit card statement, which might be even more frightening after all that holiday spending. Experts say this is the perfect time of year to start making some smart money moves. For more, let's bring in Jill Schlesinger, business analyst at CBS News and host of Jill on Money. Her podcast is Better Off. Hi, Jill.
Hello.
Okay, so what should be top of mind for most people when it comes to taking stock of your financials at the end of the year?
Well, I think that most people are probably not particularly in the mood to look at their money situation with a week to go in the year. But I would suggest to you that this is the best time to do it. And, you know, there's a reflection about what was, but there's also an opportunity to look ahead and think about what your financial situation is going to look like in 2019 and how you might want to prepare for it. I think the challenge this year is that because of the new tax law, there are so many people who really don't exactly know what their situation is going to look like next year. And the big question for those people is simply going to be, will my 2018 and 2019 income kind of look the same as it did in 2017? And that may be your first jumping off point to try to say, what can I expect when tax season rolls around in April? And is there an opportunity for me to do something within this last few days of the year to take advantage or avoid some future pain?
Well, and I guess one of the big questions there for most people is going to be, can I still do a standardized deduction, which is now bigger than it was before, or do I need to itemize my deductions on my taxes? Because that was a big change in the tax bill.
Absolutely, because the tax code now says that a standard deduction is $12,000 for singles, $24,000 if you're married filing jointly, $18,000 if you're head of household. So what does that really mean? It means that if you are going to claim under the standard deduction, you're going to find it easy to file your tax returns because you don't have to go through and look at all those different items,
right,
whether it's mortgage interest or charitable. But – and here's this big but – if you are going to itemize, what it means is your itemized deductions have changed pretty dramatically, specifically in places where you have high state and local income taxes, because those taxes, state, local, sales, real estate, and personal property, those are limited to $10,000. And if you actually see that limitation and you see that maybe you actually now, because of that limitation, you're no longer going to itemize, maybe you are going to fall into the standard deduction, that can really change your outlook for the year ahead. I'm not suggesting you have to do your entire tax return, but you can kind of eyeball this. I actually went through it with somebody who had no idea what her tax returns, like where things were. It took us a half an hour to figure it out.
What about your investments, whether it be a 401k or if you're invested in stocks yourself? Is now a time to sort of take a look and maybe sell some things or buy some things? Or what would you suggest?
I think that by and large, on an annual basis, to rebalance your portfolio is really advisable. Now, notice I'm saying rebalance. I am not saying you have to go figure out where the top of the market is, where the bottom of the market is, and be some sort of market timing genius, because we know that doesn't really work.
Well, and actually, you said to me once, and I think this was very smart, that if you have brilliant timing and you sell at the right time, you then have to also buy back in at the right time in order to make it work. Otherwise, you may have lost a lot of money.
That's exactly right. You have to make two perfect decisions. And we know that over time, market timing really does not work. So what does it mean to rebalance? It could mean that sometime during the year, you work for a big company and maybe they awarded you company stock. And maybe you were fortunate enough to work in a company where the stock price went up this year. Maybe that position has taken on a bloated presence in your portfolio that you may have said, well, gee, I'd rather keep that to 2 or 3%. Now it's 10%. So rebalancing means that you're selling positions that have probably blown up, which is good news, but you're forcing yourself to sell them at a time when they're higher so that you can then reallocate and get that percentage back in line. Maybe you are 50% stocks and 50% bonds. If you're 50-50 still, that could be fine. But maybe things got out of whack and you want to put that allocation back in place so that whenever the next event occurs, and there will be a next event, upside or downside, that you're positioned in the way that is best for you, based on you, not based on anyone else, not even really based on your age, based on your risk tolerance and when you think you're going to actually need this money.
What about just savings, a savings account? How much should you have saved as you look at your finances at the year's end?
You know, it's so funny because when I talk to young people who are starting out in markets where housing is such a huge cost, this is a terrible number to come up with, right? Because they're saying, well, I'm spending 40% of my take-home pay on my rent, so it's impossible to save. So here's the target. The target that we're really hoping for is that people are saving about 10%, maybe 15% in their retirement accounts, and then trying to make sure that they save enough to fund any emergency expenses in that savings, checking, or CD accounts. But you know what's been great about this year? We've had rate hikes by the Federal Reserve, and that may have cost you money in additional interest, but all of a sudden, savings, checking accounts, they're paying interest again. And I really encourage people to check that out because a lot of banks, the old brick and mortar banks, really pay piddling interest. If you go online, you are likely to find savings and checking in money market accounts at 2%, which sounds like nothing, but it sounds like a lot considering many of the big banks were paying about a tenth of a percent for years and years since the financial crisis.
What if you are near retirement? What would you suggest that people do at this point?
I think that if you are nearing retirement, the inclination is I'll just sell every single stock I own and go into safe stuff. I would not advise that. When I was a certified financial planner in practice, I think that many people would say, I must go to cash at age 67. Well, you know what? Your retirement is probably going to last two decades, maybe more. You cannot usually afford to take no risk in that portfolio. I mean, if you're a gazillionaire, it's fine. But if you're like the rest of us working schlubs, then you've got to make sure that the money you invest can last you over those decades. And that usually means trying to beat inflation. To beat inflation, you need to have a portfolio that has growth, and some of that growth will come with stocks. I do think a really great idea is, especially if, let's say, you know you're going to be retiring within the next 5 years, it's a wonderful time to start crunching some numbers. If you want to do it yourself, there's lots of websites to do it. If you want to go talk to a financial planner, a financial advisor, make sure that that person does what you really need, which is crunching numbers, not selling you product.
What about credit cards? Jill, you and I have talked about this before. It is always a bad idea to hold debt on your credit cards and not pay off your bill every month. If that's something that you can do, don't run up a huge amount of credit card debt because you're paying a very high interest rate on it. But what do you suggest people do? Right now, we're being marketed to like crazy with all these, you know, cards are going to give you this much or that many miles and points and blah, blah, blah. What do you think people should do as they think about their credit card portfolio?
Well, I think that most people carry more credit cards than they need. And so what I really try to advocate is to pick one or two cards that you use. You can use some rewards just based on your behavior. So maybe cash back is better for you. Maybe travel rewards is better for you. Pick one or two and just keep those cards as your active cards. You don't have to run around shutting down every single account. But what you do need to do is, if you are carrying credit card debt, understand that the average credit card interest rate is something around 17% right now. Gosh, that's an awful lot of money to pay. Well, when you pay down credit card debt that's carrying a 17% interest rate, you are getting a 17% after-tax return on your money. That does not exist. And so before you start doing things like figuring out where the bottom of the Bitcoin market is or even investing in your own company's stock, go ahead. Look at those credit card bills, see how much debt is outstanding, go in descending order, highest interest to lowest interest, and start paying down that debt and earn that risk-free return, that double-digit risk-free return. Boy, that's kind of the best deal in town. Sorry you had the debt to begin with, but paying it down now, about the smartest thing you can do.
Jill Schlesinger, business analyst at CBS News and host of Jill on Money. Her podcast is Better Off. Jill, Happy New Year. Thank you.
Happy New Year, and thank you so much for everything you do for me. I really appreciate it.